Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Hi, this is the Lori Tatarsky Show, and I'm Miss Lori Eve Tatarsky. Yes, thank you, thank you. And this is the morning show, so rise and shine to the iconic light.
Amen.
There's light all around us, every in every sense of the word.
Including the studio, where it is very hot on this cold winter's day.
And so it we'll feels take wonderful. We'll take the light. But everybody, rise and shine, and coffee in one hand, confidence in the other.
I'll cheers to that. Very good.
Yeah, cheers. So here I am, and this is quite the monumental moment. This is my first podcast. It's going to be a whole new era, so to speak. I feel very, through my whole healing process, which I talk about in my book, I Dare You to Walk in My Shoes. The book is hot off the press on Amazon with a whole new cover and some new content. I feel vindicated and one day to be syndicated.
Amen. I like that.
Yeah. So here we are with Mr. Connor Walsh.
Hello.
Hi, Connor.
Hey, Lori. How are you?
Good. Connor has quite the story. He's been doing magnificent things in the community and venturing out into many projects.
A little too many at times, but hey, we're hanging in there.
Aren't we all?
Yep.
Aren't we all? We're all kind of going in so many directions and then trying to hone it back in.
Amen.
And stay on that path, that designated path.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story as far as... You know, I know you're in the entertainment industry,
yep.
And that's not something to take lightly in today's world. You know, there's a lot of dedication. There's a lot of different talents. There's a lot of different, variables. So how and why, I would say, you know, why? What made you get into such a path?
Oh, if you ask some of my friends, they'll tell you it's because I'm an only child and I'm an attention seeker. So,
I have a sibling and I'm an attention seeker.
So there you go. It's not a religious thing. It's not through and through. Yeah, there's a lot I could say based on that. First of all, I'm very happy to be here with you, and I'm happy to be producing the show with you. I'm excited as to where
I'm
it's going to go.
Me too.
And I appreciate you having me as your first guest to have a friend on, get you going, and let's get this moving. It's going to be a fun time. But to answer your question, there's always been a spark of entertainment within me from a very early age. I would listen to songs like James Taylor's Carolina in My Mind, and I was like 3 years old critiquing the lyrics, saying it's like, why is he going in his mind? Can't he just get a plane ticket in which Carolina, north or south? And my parents would always say, it's like, wow, he's 3 years old and he's even putting those pieces together. That's interesting. And then I was in love with songs like I was a big Superman fan, so Superman, It's Not Easy by Five for Five.
That's followed you.
Yeah, that's really followed me, absolutely.
Do you really feel like, I know for me, like, so many things, and I talk about it in my book, even on the back of the book, where I introduce myself, so many things of who I am today, even with all the roadblocks, even with all the pits and falls and, the valleys, so much of who I was as a child.
Oh, big time. We are all still our inner children, and it's a matter of how we decide to embrace that or hide that. That's
right.
Pretty much the way that everybody goes. We're all just our inner childs in a slightly bigger costume. That's
right.
Essentially,
and I think a lot of times, unfortunately, with where we are in society, we've all been through, none of us go unscathed.
Yeah.
And we've all been through so much different moments that construe as trauma. And I think that's when we shut down this beautiful, effervescent light.
Yeah.
And that's so much of our inner child and all our dreams encapsulated.
Oh, without a doubt. It's a matter of the more that we embrace our inner child, probably the better off that we're going to be. But it's a matter of actually accepting that rather than trying to be what we think society and the environment around us wants us to be. Mm-hmm. The more that we can, play into that. And, you asked me about being in the entertainment field. Yeah, there's a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of business that goes behind it. But also at the same time, it allows you to stay creative and have that spark of childhood that sometimes goes away as we go older.
And it's almost like that. You don't feel so heavy. You don't feel the weight of the world. You feel the light of the world.
there's a mix of both. There's absolutely a mix of both. As an entertainer, you know, you take in the environment that you have and you produce that into the art, the positive and the negative. So yeah, you have the lightness, you have the childlike moments, but also at the same time, there are moments where you feel like you have a responsibility to critique and comment on the world around you and put it into a synthesized analysis that helps break down the things that words cannot simply say alone.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That's a great way of putting it. Now, did you follow on that path? Did you always follow on that path that you knew what you were going to be? Or did you have things that came up along the way? Obviously, we all have those little things where we're like, okay, I'm going to be the next star that hits Hollywood.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, Hollywood hits you.
Yep. Yeah, it's been a very winding journey. But I knew from a very early age that I wanted to be an entertainer in one form or another. So part of that story was, you know, music was always my first love. And I'm a musician. For anybody out there who has no idea, I own my own company, CMJW Entertainment, ready to spend some time with all of your live and recorded entertainment media needs and handle things from music, podcasting, commercials, videos, live sound, production, things
what
along those
lines. What don't you do? Where do your talents end? They just don't.
Tennis. I can't play tennis.
Well, I'm ready to serve the community and I'm ready to serve the – well, I love tennis.
It's a great sport. I just can't play it. Okay. But yeah, so with all of that – but when I was younger, music was the main and only outlet. As I got older, the outlets expanded as I had a greater perspective of things. And it was like, oh, wow, there's a lot I can do with my talents here. And that's something that's beautiful. Yeah, from a very early age, I knew that I wanted to be in the arts. I remember in high school, and I think I told this story on my other podcast, Walsh Wednesday. I had a teacher who said to me, well, first of all, I had an email, rocking since 97. And I still have this email. And my teacher said, it's like, Connor, you're about to go to college. You're about to go into the workforce. Don't you think that you're going to need a more professional email? And I said, I'm going to be going into music and entertainment. How more professional can I get with an email like this?
Exactly. That was some segue.
And that was an email I used for many years as my primary email. I still have it. It's not my primary business email, but I do still use it frequently. And I get a chuckle every time like I see and think that. But yeah, it was one of those things, you know, my parents were very supportive of the arts. They knew that I found my thing. They saw the potential in it.
And how was your family? Was your family into entertainment? Were they completely different? Was it a whole arena of people in your life that were kind of, you know, leaning towards this type of lifestyle? Or were you a unique, you know, in your own right?
If you ask my parents, they will definitely say that personality skipped a generation. They are more of the quieter introverts, while I'm the more out there, boisterous,
gregarious,
on stage. Yeah,
gregarious.
Nothing against my parents by any means. They are phenomenal talkers. You know, if you can get them into a conversation, they're very lovely people. But neither
call
of them.
Up. I want to talk to them right now. Get them on the phone.
we're using that as a backup recording. We'll do that later. Dad's at work right now. But yeah, they're very lovely people. But they're not the first to get up on stage or to raise their hand like I am. And so when it comes to my parents, my mom was definitely the academic. She taught me a lot of what it means to be regimented, responsible, to be there for other people, and to be reliable. You know, and that's where a lot of my work ethic came in.
Loyal is a good dedicated.
Yep. And then when it came to my dad was slightly more the free spirit. He was the one that really showed me a lot more of entertainment. We would have long car rides of listening to the radio, and he's showing me all the different artists. He never played an instrument by any means. He always joked around and saying, I play the stereo. That's what he does.
That's cute.
But the relationship that I had with my dad really influenced the music and content that I've taken in over the years and has really influenced my style and my voice as an artist, whether that is through music, whether that's through acting, directing, producing, any of those things. I really have a lot of that relationship
you have them
to
in
do
you.
For that.
You
oh,
have,
without a doubt.
I know, like, my parents, my dad passed on when I was 17, as many people know. Yeah. I talk about it in the book and all. However, it's been 36 years, not to give away my age, because I think my skin looks
How's
so
that
shiny.
Possible? You're 37.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, but he was so impactful in my life. And you talk about, you know, he didn't play an instrument per se, but we used to go, he used to take me to his antique business.
Oh, that's lovely.
I loved it. I learned the art of, you know, finagling, so to speak, which is a Yiddish word for negotiating.
Yes.
And I learned about building rapport with people and learning the art of communication.
Mm-hmm.
And we would sing great tunes to Frank Sinatra and Barbara Streisand.
Mm, fantastic.
And all different of the greats. And, you know, he was so much a part of who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom, God bless her, she's been riding horses like since I was first born.
Yep.
And she's
show off the horse necklace.
Oh, the horse necklace. Yes. My dad got this from my mom as a gift before he had gone to what I consider eternity.
Yeah.
And, she's 83 and she's still giddy up, go girl.
God bless her.
God bless. So, you know, just her strong character and her wonderful nature and her, you know, just dedication to me and to my brother has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice when we can take our families and take our parents and how they just cultivate who we are and who we become.
Without a doubt. Absolutely. We, you know, as much as we are our own selves, we are also a product of our environments. There's a mix of both. You know, there are people who go back and forth of, are we one or are we the other? No, we're a mix of both.
Right.
And, you know, I'm grateful for the childhood I had. You know, as I mentioned before, I'm an only child. And that really allowed me, well, that allowed not just me, but my family to really hone in and focus on a lot of different things. I got a broad variety of things growing up where I was in so many sports. I was in so many music and acting classes. I was heavily involved in, you know, just school
events. You had,
as
they say, la creme de la creme.
Yes, very much so.
The best of the best.
No, I'm very grateful for it all. You know, there are people who I've met who say like their time in school was unbearable, or they said that there was like nothing great about the school that they were in. And I would ask them, it's like, well, did you take advantage of the opportunities that were there for you? And I think that's a big difference for a lot of people. I saw an opportunity and I took it. And even when there wasn't an opportunity, I made an opportunity for myself. You got
to
make the most out of what you're given.
I think you have to do that throughout your life.
Yeah, without
a
doubt.
When you see a door, you have to go in the door. You can't just stay and slightly turn the handle. You have to fully turn that handle, walk in, and see if that's going to be a door that's going to be extended.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I believe that, and that's you know, that's an ideology that I still live by today. When the opportunity doesn't present itself, make the opportunity.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, explore it. And if you see, you know, that's kind of where we get to my next question.
Okay.
I know for me, and I talk about it a lot in the book, I came to my own understanding of spirituality and faith.
Mm.
I have a very strong, I've battled mental health challenges, and I think we'll explore that more with you as well.
Yeah.
And I battled some food addiction. And these are two very severe things that almost you know, sabotaged all my dreams and aspirations and hopes. And it was only through coming through a strong sense of love and spiritual acceptance that I was able to overcome and give back now.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about, do you have a sense of spirituality? And, you know, tell me a little bit about how you've experienced certain things, challenges.
That's a great and very weighted question, Lori. So I grew up Roman Catholic. That's what my parents were. And I grew up at St. Peter's Catholic Church. I went to St. Peter's Catholic School. I was at the school for 8 years. I was an altar boy. I was a sacristan.
Wow.
I was prim and proper goody two shoes in that regard, and learned a lot. But I remember when I was in school, there were a lot of things that didn't always make sense to me.
I know. That's what a lot of people say.
And while some people will stay quiet and just listen and leave the questions to themselves, I was definitely somebody who rose their hand and asked those questions. And I wasn't doing it to be a troublemaker or to talk back.
You wanted clarity.
I wanted clarity and I wanted understanding. And you know, one of the I would say is like, hey, I'm sorry, like this doesn't make sense to me in my religion classes. Like, how could X, Y, and Z be? And, you know, my teachers, God bless them, very phenomenal people, and I'm still connected to a lot of them today. A number of them said to me, well, that's just faith. That's just blind faith. And I'm like, that didn't sit with me. And there are just certain things where I was like, I don't know. And over time, there were some issues when it came to my parish. We learned about some money issues. We learned about a sexual abuse scandal with our pastor, somebody that I worked very closely with.
Oh, wow. That must have destroyed you.
It did. It honestly did. It rocked my structure and belief in organized religion. And
I think a lot of people feel that way. And I think at the core of everything is that for so many people, especially as children, there's that sense of confusion.
Yeah.
So people dismiss it as they get older because things aren't really made so clear to us in many ways.
It's not black and white. And that was, that was one of the things that really struck me hard. And that kind of, when did I find out about that? About the sexual abuse scandal. I think that was like either right before the pandemic started or right when the pandemic started, around that time frame. I forget exactly what year, but it was, that was a very tough time for me and a lot of other people in our community. And it definitely made me question a lot of things. To this day, I feel like I'm a child of God. I still feel like I am a student of the world and the universe.
I don't say that.
Yeah, I don't.
Could you repeat that, please?
I feel like I'm a child of the earth and the universe.
And a student.
Student of the earth, student of all that. And I am. So when that all happened, I would no longer say that I'm affiliated with any particular religion. And when I say that, religion is man-made and faith is divine. And over the last 6 years, I've really gone on to study a lot of different cultures, read about a lot of different perspectives, because I'm just simply curious about it.
That's how I am, but I do follow a certain protocol.
Oh, yeah.
For me, at least. I have an interesting story. I'm a Jewish girl from Long Island. Yep. There's no other a Jewish girl from Long Island.
Yeah.
And however, I do follow Jesus Christ as the Messiah.
Messianic Jew.
And I always say a mess of a Jew because, and I joke about it because there is that controversy. Regular Jews, so to speak, don't believe Jesus was the Messiah. Yeah. And there's that whole thing. And But I have my belief. And however, I do study all different spiritual beliefs and all different, because I'm curious, because I, like you, consider myself a child of the universe, a child of God, and a student, very much a student, that we're always learning and growing. So a student of the universe and a student of God.
Absolutely. To analyze and to completely understand the beauties of life, you have to study all aspects, not just one dogmatic structure.
Right. And you have to be open-minded.
Absolutely. And you can learn something from every little thing. I would call myself at this point, agnostic Christian. That would probably be the best way of putting it. The fact that, my roots in religion are Christianity, but in the agnostic case where I question a lot and I'm looking for answers in a variety of different ways. I personally have found a lot of peace in a lot of holistic practices, very holistic, very earthly, very grounded. But then also I love reading philosophy
myself as well.
Absolutely. Whether I'm reading Eastern or Western philosophy, old, new. I just got a book series for Christmas. I asked for this at a Secret Santa. I'm going to butcher his name. I apologize. Thich Nhat Hanh is his name. He was a Buddhist monk. He passed away a couple of years ago. But he was like second to the Dalai Lama when it came to people of Buddhism. But one of the things about him, he doesn't just simply preach Buddhism. He preaches ways to live. And when you read his books, he's taking
so principles.
There's so many principles.
Right.
And
it's not just preaching. It's matching the how-to with it.
And he relates a lot of his teachings to a variety of different religions.
Right. And I think not to get off track, but as far as the way I had written my book, I talk a lot about living and dealing with mental health challenges, food addiction, and trauma. But I also do a lot of how-tos, how to live a good life, how to overcome, how to assimilate, things like that. I think it's important to always have that, almost that how-to.
Absolutely. I agree on that. And, you know, I feel like I'm going to be learning forever. I'm excited to read more, to learn more. That's why I like doing this kind of entertainment and community journalism, where I get to speak with people like you and other people around my community and learn more through them and grow my perspective. So I think that's one of the best things that I can do. I feel like I am in touch with my faith and the great beyond when I am having these passionate conversations with somebody like you here behind the microphone. That's how I feel like I am answering my calling to God, the universe, and everything beyond that.
Right. And somebody definitely is calling. Hold on. I think it's your dad. I think it's your dad. No, I'm just joking.
Again, dad's dad's working. Probably running around appraising houses right now.
Yes. But I did want to ask you, you know, we live in such a time, and that's one of the reasons that gave me the initiative and the drive to want to have my own podcast was to really be able to break down the stigma and barriers of mental illness and addiction and trauma.
Yeah.
Because so many people, I would say everybody, even those that don't realize it, are in some ways suffering.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we need to be more open. Like, I dare you to walk in my shoes.
100%.
I dare you to walk in your shoes.
Yeah.
It's time. It's time we all walk in our own shoes. We have our own voice.
Yeah.
So how do you feel from either your own experience, if you're forthright enough to talk about it, or just in general, how do you feel about what's going on in this very difficult and dark times that we all need to gather and bring that iconic light back?
Yeah, I agree with you on making your inner light shine. And I'm an advocate of speaking about anybody's struggles, anybody's past. I wasn't always that way. I think, you know, growing up, I attribute it to quote unquote Catholic guilt, the martyrdom that so many of us Catholics have gone through.
Right, confession.
In the words of George Carlin, I'm a recovering Catholic. So, so I have that. But then I also have the fact that I was a boy being raised into a man in the early 2000s, and there was a lot of stigmas and stereotypes of not expressing oneself. So there were a lot of things that I kept bottled up for a very, very long time. I was not one to express myself.
How did that make you feel? Were you angry? Were you resentful? Were you bitter?
I think all those words and then some. It led to a lot of issues with anxiety and depression, particularly late middle school and high school. But the thing was, I and my family, and you know, I don't judge my family at all for this, we just weren't educated on mental health
nearly as much.
I think
that's the whole thing. There's such a lack of education.
Yeah.
I know when I was going through all my harrowing times, I look back now, they were all very difficult, but some I could really laugh at. And as you know, I use humor a lot. And I think it's so important. I think that's such a driving force in success, in reaching one's higher calling, in letting others experience joy, experiencing joy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking back, there are a lot of victories as well.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
But, you know, as far as the mental health, how do you feel about it now? I mean, like...
It's definitely been... It's an ongoing journey. You know, as I said about the education factor, you know, when I was in high school, I was struggling with severe panic attacks, along with... Turns out I also had vertigo too. That didn't get diagnosed until college, but the mix of both of those was a fun combination. But the thing was, when it came to the panic attacks, since I'm having heart palpitations, everything's racing, I'm having issues having the fainting spells were more due to vertigo. It was such a great time. We were getting myself scanned for heart issues. Because it was like, oh, something physical. You know, again, the education of it all, we weren't necessarily thinking, oh, should I get checked for mental health issues? That wasn't in our vocabulary yet. And it really wasn't until the pandemic happened, and I feel like this is a story for a lot of people, where it opened up their eyes and their minds to a lot more mental health issues, where, you know, I became the caregiver for my grandparents. And that was a very tough time. During the pandemic, I had a strong dependency to alcohol as well. And I don't think I could ever say that I'm an alcoholic, but I could definitely say that time in my life, I was alcohol dependent.
You were more prone to.
And
you think because of the isolation?
Not so much the isolation, but rather the desperation and the level of defeat that I felt. Because I felt like in 2020, a lot of things were really rising up to the occasion. I was going to go on tour for my music. I was going to get a new job, new apartment. I was in a beautiful relationship. And then when the pandemic happened, I lost all of it. And then here I am becoming the caregiver for my grandparents, moving back home. Moving back home was something that I never expected to do.
Right.
Asked 2019, Connor.
Trust me, I had to move back home too. And I was, at that point, I was already early 40s.
Yeah. It was a tough pill to swallow. And that's why I feel like I did become so alcohol dependent, and then I was also
using it to cope, as most people do. And I think that's important to say that we don't necessarily choose these addictions. Mm-hmm. They choose us because we're looking for ways to deal with such pain and such disappointments and such harshness.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I remember nights, well, first of all, I left all my liquor on the bottom cabinet. And I would joke around, and it's actually a dark joke when I look at it now. The reason why I had it on the bottom cabinet was so I could crawl to it instead of having to stand up or do anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I would frequent like 5 or 6 different liquor stores to make it seem like I wasn't frequenting one too often. And that was part of my own shame about it. And one thing that I was really good with, I had a very high tolerance, and I was able to act, and I was able to do a lot of things while being under the influence. I was very functioning when I was drinking, and I always said
you always felt that guilt and shame.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Since I always had such a high tolerance, I used to say it when you're drinking to find the void and you can't get there. It's a very destructive process, and it was a dark year in my life, and fortunately, something that I feel like I was able to, that I was able to move from. One of the main reasons how I got out of it was caregiving, actually. We were moving my grandparents from their apartment in Cornwall to an assisted living in Poughkeepsie, which closer to us, easier on them, a lot of great ways to further assist them. In that moving process, I lived with them for several weeks. And when I lived with them for several weeks, I cut myself off cold turkey. That was a very difficult time period physically and mentally for me. Physically, here I am physically moving them out of their apartment that they've been in for 30 plus years, moving them in. But then I could actually tell the withdrawals that I was having at the same time too. So it was an eye-opening experience. It's like, wow, I really had much more of an issue than I thought I did. And, you know, looking back on it, it could have become a very, very difficult time. And then by the time that my grandparents passed away, you know, I was in this feeling where for the first time in my life, I felt like I wanted to open up about my anxieties, my struggles, actually get
to
speak about these things.
Was it to give back?
No, it was to be selfish. It was to be able to actually get through all the crap that I was going through. It was a matter of, like, I hit a breaking point. I knew I couldn't keep it within myself anymore.
It was tearing you apart.
It was tearing me apart. And, you know, therapy alone is very expensive. And as somebody who didn't have insurance at the time, what am I supposed to do? When my grandparents passed away, they were on hospice. And this wonderful thing that hospice offers is bereavement counseling after people pass away. And I'm like, sign me up. And it's free. You can do it for, what, I think 15 months after the passing of your loved one or whoever you're connected with. And I look at it as one of my grandparents' last final gifts to me. And through grief counseling, I was able to open up more and share things that I wasn't ready to share for a long time in my life. And it opened up a lot of things from my childhood, recent, and eventually, you know, after the point of grief counseling was over, I was debating with the concept of, oh, should I go to therapy now? And for several months, probably like 6 months, I didn't do anything. But then sadly, one of my best friends passed away.
Oh, wow.
And that sent me through very, very deep depression. And I remember being at work just staring at my computer, unable to do anything. I described that moment as a moment of paralysis, not being able to do anything. The depression was extremely deep and dark. I'll admit I had suicidal thoughts.
Oh yeah, I can relate. I've been through many times like that.
It was really rough. And this was the time I was working at the radio station still, and I had the pleasure of working with I believe you've had a chance to meet her, Donna Thomas.
I'm working with her. I just did her podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah.
She's incredible.
Oh, such an incredible woman. I worked with Donna Thomas of James's Warriors. Mm-hmm. And then the next day I had members of the Be a Friend Project. two incredible mental health organizations, James's Warriors, specifically helping with suicide awareness, and Be a Friend Project, primarily bullying, but the mental health and suicide awareness aspect is heavily involved in it. So here I am, back to back days.
And you don't think that was some kind of sense of
Well,
the universe showing up for you when it needed to?
That was exactly it. The 2 days back to back, I remember just like, just giving up. I'm looking up. It's like, I'll go to therapy.
I'll do it.
I get it. I see what you're trying to do. And I have this wonderful therapist now. I remember when I was sending out feelers to a bunch of people, she was the first one to get back to me, first one to do kind of like a feeler.
Instinct.
It was a great instinct. We are still having sessions together, actually.
How has that impacted you the most? Like, how have you seen that you've grown or changed?
A lot of confidence. A lot of confidence and a lot of boundaries.
But not a selfish confidence.
No. It's a confidence in the set of boundaries, you know, where I will always be a people pleaser. That's a part of me. But you can also have boundaries in being a people pleaser as well. I let myself get walked on way too many times. I stretched myself way too thin. I accepted too many bad behaviors from people for many, many years. And through therapy, I feel like I gave myself permission to set up these boundaries to be like, hey, I can be here for you. I can help you, but I need to also be here to take care of myself first.
Yeah, that's so important. The journey of self-love. I'm first realizing it in my 50s.
Yeah.
I've been through so much. And by the way, this is the Lori Talk therapy show.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is just a therapy session right now.
Right.
No, and it's lovely. I forget who said this. This was one of the things that helped push me towards therapy as well. I really wish I could remember who said this, but self-love isn't about liking yourself. It's about putting in the energy to become the person you want to be.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that was a real turning point for me in helping like shift my concept of self-love. And at this point now where I was extremely self-deprecating for many, many years of my life, I don't look at myself the same way. Do I struggle with that sometimes? Absolutely. Everybody does. But I feel like I have a much better inner dialogue and relationship with myself.
Right. You don't have a much negative banter. You have more positivity.
Yeah.
And you feel like when you give that positivity to yourself, it exudes to other people.
Absolutely. I always exuded positivity to others. I didn't exude it to myself. But then in the times where I feel like I have set up the boundaries and I've set up the ways to take care of myself, I've seen that I have much more to offer. And that's kind of incredible looking back, where I felt like I was pushing myself so hard. But now I don't feel like I have to push as hard.
Right. It's already there.
It's there. Yeah. And, as a recovering people pleaser, there are moments where I still think it was like, oh my God, they're going to hate me for this. And then I got to stop and think to myself, it's like, Connor, it's like, if they truly respect you, and truly want to work with you and truly enjoy being around with you, they will respect that you are respecting yourself.
Exactly. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And it will only deepen whatever kind of working or personal relationship that I have with said person or people, whatever that might be. So, yeah. Honestly, actually, later today, I have therapy. So, it's going to be wonderful. Yeah. No, it's a good start to the day. And
I know I just want to kind of wrap things up here a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to just briefly say that as far as, a couple of things that I've been doing, where I see this growing tremendously. Like I said, I'm feeling vindicated through healing and health.
Yeah.
And maybe one day syndicated, but
let's
just going to have lots of fun with it.
Yeah.
Always think big, think positive.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go and take the book for a minute.
Yep.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. I was just using it to prop it up.
Yeah, prop it up. Why not? And I just want to, for today's little adage, I want to read, let's really quickly look, read a little excerpt, positive excerpt.
As she's doing that, I just want to let you guys know that you'll be able to find this podcast on YouTube and wherever you stream your podcast. We're going to have everything out and distributed through Castos, and that'll be the landing page for this podcast. You'll be able to find all the different links to social media, YouTube, and more through that. So if you're enjoying this episode and you want to see where this podcast is going to go, Make sure that you follow along, you save those links, and we're excited to see everything that this show is going to offer. Thank you to Andrew O'Grady and MHA. Here we are. We're filming in the MHA studios that are allowing us to do this.
Yes, it is quite the space. It is quite the serene and, you know, just wonderful space. But I know we had talked a lot today about grasping that inner child and really living up to the spark of the inner child.
Yeah.
In my book, I talk a lot about different narratives, different poetry, different things about all the experiences I've gone through. Mm-hmm. And I happen to go back to a piece I wrote in 1995. Okay. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm just going to read a little bit about, it's called Toddler's Toys in a Gift Box.
Oh, yes. I remember this passage. Okay.
Yeah. So it says, when you're a child, even the simplest discovery satisfies all daily wants until the next day when the thirst for adventure is renewed. They say that the world is your playground. As a young girl, I had envisioned such endless fields of promise, the spotlight of childhood, the adoration, the glitz and glamour. Those around me encouraging my every move in fine theater. So I think I'll just leave it with that, a little paragraph.
Yeah.
And say, Connor, it's been a true pleasure. I always feel such exhilaration, exuberation, and joy when we get to have our deep talks.
Yeah.
And we still get to have fun with it, and we experience all different emotions.
Yeah.
And I'll look forward to expanding this wonderful opportunity. And here's to coffee in one hand.
And confidence in the other.
And confidence in the other. Peace out. Peace within.
Love it.